why
if you only
I would
kill
do
one
it,
person, it's not a series.
That's right.
I'm Austin.
I'm Cloud.
I'm Brittany.
And this is
today's movie is Underwater. Underwater is a... Now, we have to actually make a decision here because we haven't done this yet. Do I say 2020 because I normally say 2000 whatever because this is the first time we've had one of these? Underwater is a 2020 or 2020?
I would just say 2020.
2020, yeah.
But I never said 2018 or 2019. Okay. Underwater is a 2020 science fiction horror action drama? Film, I guess. I was reading from two different sources. Directed by William Eubank, starring Kristen Stewart, Vincent Castle, Jessica Henwick, John Gallagher Jr., and T.J. Miller. Out of plot synopsis.
There's a vessel underwater that does drilling, and then like another vessel underwater that houses people, and it kind of implodes, and then people have to escape to the surface, but there's no pods. So they follow a pipe to the drill, and they meet Cthulhu, and try to blow it up.
Try?
I think do blow it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I think she
seems
did.
Like
you can't
blow it up.
Kill a god. That's the whole point.
It's not literally Cthulhu.
No,
though.
Actually,
it's
the Cthulhu filmmaker said that it is Cthulhu.
That's
they said
bogus.
That it's meant to be an H.P. Lovecraft monster.
I
like.
Disagree. I disagree
very
with
specifically,
this.
They said it is Cthulhu. And just by looking at him, you know that it is.
Uh-huh.
Well, if it's not Cthulhu, then what is it?
It's just a thing.
No. It's Cthulhu. Also, I just realized
open the pod bay doors.
Cthulhu. So.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't do that.
I'm trying to pull up the listing of all the people so I can actually come on now. There we go. I'm not good with names.
Yes, well.
I kind of feel bad for Rodrigo. He died first.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, well, he kind of sacrificed himself a little bit. Like he took the faulty helmet.
And we know he took the faulty helmet because we've seen him do it.
Yep.
Poor guy. Come on, bottles. Stop sounding my addiction. Where to start?
Well, while you figure out where to start, just as a factoid here.
Oh boy.
This is the first 2020 movie that we've done, and it is also the last movie released as a 20th Century Fox movie before that Disney changed the name after the acquisition, which is now 20th Century Studios. But this is the last thing that we'll ever say 20th Century Fox in the opening logos. So
sad.
So that's a place to start.
All right. So I overall enjoyed the movie. I got good vibes from it. I have very
good vibes or like tense, anxiety ridden, like, oh my God, I'm panicking vibes. Cause that's
good
what
vibes.
I got.
Good vibes. Mostly. I didn't have so much of a problem with T.J. Miller's character as some people. I'm looking at you, man.
Me.
Yes.
Some people would have. The only real direct issues I don't like were towards the beginning of the movie. Whenever they're having to do like the crawling through tight spaces part.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's claustrophobic. It's one, we get a jump scare seeing a dead body that was just there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that because it's.
So it didn't actually jump out from anywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
Well, it's like it's the dark, so they couldn't see it, right? And so
no,
she shined the light on it.
No, she's like right there.
I know.
And the problem with it is she's already looking at it. It's the camera does like a jump pan.
Right.
And then a loud score. And I'm like, that's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's actually scary from it is she didn't bother to close the lady's eyes.
Yeah.
So as she goes past it and Rodrigo gets up to it, it's staring right at him.
Yeah.
And so,
like in like a like help me kind of face too.
So at that point now I'm thinking, well, is she not dead and they're going to have to leave her? Because then that would be both sad and scary.
But it's like,
no, she was dead. She was dead.
Well, you know, the eye closing thing doesn't really work. Like, it works in movies, but if you try to do that on a real person, it just they just open again.
I'll poke their eye out. I don't care if they're dead.
Please don't do that.
And, like, it really
don't
bothers
desecrate
me. Like, people,
the dead bodies.
People watch movies and think that that's something you could do, and then they try it when they're in a situation where somebody actually dies, and then the eyes won't stay closed, and they're, extra bothered by it, because they're like, this is supposed to work. You're supposed to be able to close the eyes. Nah, I've seen movies.
Like, I'll grab their eyelid and just stretch it over
Gross.
Their bottom.
No, because then, like, isn't that kind of what one of the monsters does at the end, except it's his mouth and not his eyelid? He, like, stretches it over her whole body,
yeah.
And then she, like, blasts. That was scary as fuck.
And then the shaky cam.
Because
I know a lot of this is, like, steady cam kind of stuff, but there are moments where no one's moving, and you can tell this person holding the camera.
It's handheld. Well, I mean,
that's too wobbly for it not moving.
To be like the camera's unsteady, therefore that it's a high tension scene. But
there wasn't any tension.
Okay.
Was TJ Miller there? Then I agree.
Let me counter with, but there was.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what y'all know about filmmaking. And that stuff is effective. Like, I know that you don't like it, and like it doesn't fool, like you say, like, you know, you talk about it doesn't fool you, it doesn't make you feel tense or
whatever.
Sometimes
it does.
But it does make me feel tense, and it makes you feel like, it makes you feel wobbly and like off kilter. It's like it's the thing where you like take familiar things and make them unfamiliar, and like that's the scary thing, and it does work.
Well, no,
every time
the problem is if everyone is moving or they're moving forward, you can tell that there is there's no stillness. That's when it's good, because it makes you feel like you're part of it,
right?
But if no one is just moving, like if someone was to take a steady cam and then just bob it around while looking at us sitting at this table, that's what it was like.
Well, the disconnect
areas.
For me has always been that even if you are tense in like a situation, like you don't bob your head around, and like even if you do, like your brain does this like stabilization. Like you have like your brain is a steady cam. Like
yeah.
You don't see a lot of the movement that actually happens, like when you walk and when you move your head around. So that you don't get motion sick, like your brain is filtering it out, and so
unless you're high.
Unless you're drunk, like that's part of why it's so disorienting, because all of that goes away.
But
what bothered me more than that, though, was, and they only really do it this one time, which it's early enough so that you don't know they're only going to do it this one time. But then because they never did it again, then it retroactively frustrated me more, even though it bothered me at the time, is when they are in that. Actually, it's just before that. It's when things are still collapsing. Like the last time, what creates the thing that they then crawl through? There's like dust and water and stuff getting on the lens. And it wasn't doing that earlier when they were running through everything, and they never do it again. And that bothers me in movies. It bothers me in video games. Like when you shoot somebody and then suddenly there's blood on the screen and it's first person and you're not wearing like if you're wearing the Master Chief helmet or something, it kind of makes sense because there's a visor there. Although it's close enough to your eyes that you wouldn't be able to focus on it that way. But if you're just a person, is there like blood on your eyes now, or like is there dirt on your eyes now, depending on the circumstance of
just
what they're putting
like
on
the
screen?
Like a blink button
it's
on your.
I know. It's never made any sense to me. Yeah. It's always. But what it does to me is it reminds me that there's an abstraction there, that there is a screen between me and what's happening in the video game, or there's a camera between what's what is being shown in front of it, rather than it being a window into a situation.
Yeah.
It makes it clear that there's a mechanism that's creating the window. And it always bothers me. And they don't do it the whole time. And they could do it the whole time because there's lots of times where things could splatter around onto stuff and they never really do it except that one time. And I don't know why, but that particular time bothered me. I didn't notice the camera shaking around as much as I have in other things. Well, though,
like, so it was only in the beginning whenever they were like getting ready to go outside, mm-hmm. because when she was in the bathroom, wasn't a problem. Everything was pretty still. And so is the camera. But then once the place starts to implode, you know, like there's a lot of moving, it's not a problem. But it's not until they're like, we got to pause and we got to do all of this stuff really slowly. We got to dig TJ Miller out. Like, mm-hmm. like there's no reason this should be so shaky when it's less shaky when it's actiony and things are moving. Like, it stood out, I'd say about 3 separate occasions within like a 2-minute period. But then once we get past that, not a problem for me. Everything else turned out fine. Mm. When they're in the last facility shooting the pods off, you know, there was a little bit of shaky whenever she's like about to have the epiphany or whatever.
Yeah.
Didn't even bother. Didn't even bother.
So was it really an earthquake?
No.
Or was it the thing busting out? Well, but did an earthquake like open up a fissure or something?
No, and they were just like guessing that it was an earthquake too. What it probably was is what the like intern, the research assistant said, which was that they probably drilled into a thermal pocket, and that's where life was.
Life, as in quotations.
Yeah, not like the movie Life, which I haven't seen. But I guess it's related to this, kind of. I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. There's
the trailers I've seen for a look.
Similarity in the trailers, yeah. But I don't know. Similar. I haven't seen it either, so I don't know.
Like, well, Life is about being in space and then finding space venom.
Yeah, but otherwise, but the like,
there's like a everything creature is normal. On the ship.
Suddenly, like, things are attacking. Things are collapsing. We're all gonna die. Like, well,
I believe
that
it's only one though, because it started off as like a. Like bacteria looking stuff, and then it feed it on that one scientist that was like poking with it, and then it was like running rampant.
Is this the one where they say like every cell is like every kind of cell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's why I didn't see it, because that's like the 10% of your brain thing. I'm like, this is bogus. Like,
it's not wrong though. Like every cell does contain the necessary information to become any other kind of cell. But that's not how DNA works. So, like,
no, and like, it can't.
It, they are correct
every
in saying
kind of
that.
Cell at the same time.
No, it can't. Not at the same time. But you can activate different proteins and different DNA sequences to make it be other things. Which, like, that's why fetal cell research is so important and so also controversial, because like. You can take fetal cells and make them into almost anything because they haven't been activated for a specific sequence yet.
Like teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're using stem cell research to regrow teeth. It's pretty dope. If you do dope and that's how you lost your teeth, then you do not deserve new teeth.
I guess.
Deserve?
I'm not talking about I smoked a chronic and I lost my teeth. Nah, I ain't talk about that.
I've never heard of anyone losing teeth from smoking marijuana.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying like I'm talking about like old school people calling every drug dope.
Oh, well, they're dumb.
Exactly. But it's funny. Okay. So I don't like some of the some of the timing and the time management that this movie goes through. Like, the pacing I think is really good.
Yeah,
but then
it's like, I mean, from the time it starts, like, it almost feels like we start in a movie already. Like, it doesn't really feel like there's much of a beginning. It's just she's in the bathroom, she's talking about the spider, and then like boom,
which, how
everything
did it get
happens
there? I don't know.
That was thinking that. There? How did she's like? How did
was
you?
Was
it get
like
here?
An egg or something? In the
must have in like the in cargo somebody, yeah. or something. Yeah,
because they're really far down.
So. Okay, what were you saying? I'm sorry.
Whenever her and the captain end up like getting swam upwards, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and he like blows himself up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she passes out. No, death by implosion, pressure. and then sucked up by water. Like she passes out and then lands, but like how long has she been knocked right. out?
Yeah, we don't know.
And then like from that point, she gets to the other station. And how long was she actually in there for? Because you have this huge period of time.
How long was that shower?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there was this huge period of time that it feels like. And then it's like, I'm going to go back out there and save the two people who I left. And they're still there.
Well, I really like that, though, because it like draws, like if you were in that situation, I think those moments would feel so drawn out to you, even if like maybe not much time had passed. Like maybe you take a 5 minute shower, but like you have like a lot of emotional stuff going on during this 5 minute shower. So it feels like it lasted an hour or something.
Well, see, it's and, not like, just the shower.
No, like, I know. Her, like but, the I like wanna, everything.
Looking I'm through the cat, old the, captain's locker.
But also, I like that because that goes with her, like, in the dark, time moves differently. And, like,
yeah, but that's, you know, bullshit.
No,
though.
I agree. Like, the no, bogus, it the feels bogus different. Of it She's right.
is so, like, it bothers me so much.
That you are both wrong.
It a minute that to, like, is, 10 seconds. It's
it does, it, here's so the thing. It wrong. Doesn't matter what you're
okay,
trying
to Okay, turn off your logic brains for no, a the, second. The, that's, and, like, the perception feel is with true. Your, like,
the perception, feel,
like, your little fillers.
But the problem is that there's an external clock. Like we're watching them get the alien things getting closer and closer to the people, mm-hmm. and they're not that far away. And we're told there's a minute, and there's like a clock counting down. So like that, even if your perception is weird, there's an external anchor that keeps it from being. It's this. It's like it bothered me the same way that the water planet and gravity bothered me. Where, like, they say, like, we have to let the engines dry out for longer than we have before the giant wave hits us.
On Love and Gravity?
And yeah, and then they talk for, like, a minute, and then they're like, oh, the wave is almost here.
Oh, are you talking about Interstellar?
Interstellar.
Yeah, Love and Gravity.
Yeah. Interstellar.
Love and Gravity.
Yeah, not Gravity.
That's why I said
gravity.
Love and Gravity.
Yeah, I was late. I was confused for a second, but I'm caught
up thinking about Gravity also, because there's a lot of moments in this that kind of feel like Gravity, the, like, being pulled up and then being knocked out and not knowing how long you've been in the helmet until you're woken up by the oxygen warning. And, like, there are the helmet cracking, and there's things like that that did remind me of Gravity. But yeah, in Interstellar, suddenly the engines work because they've just decided in the scene that that's what's going to happen, even though they gave us like a hard time it was going to take. And so like you can screw with perception, but if you're going to do that, you can't give an external anchor.
Yeah.
And like that's what bothered me. Because it seems like if it really was a minute, they're going to get caught by the things because they were closing in really fast and they were only like 60 meters away or something. She even started the destruct sequence, which was really easy to do. It's like just slide these three sliders up and just overheat the reactor and like no safety protocols or anything.
Are you sure you want to do this? And you just hear a voice echo in the background. Yes, just do it. All right. Overload initiated.
You know, like normally when you're going to like activate the self-destruct on the ship, you have to like the captain and the first officer get their keys out or they have
to
put in
their code
keys.
Yeah, but that's not very like realistic
no.
for now anyway. So it's fine that they changed it from the like cliche thing.
I do agree with you on your point of having that external anchor. If it was 30 seconds, I think it wouldn't have been as noticeable because I like how that scene is set up. Mm-hmm. But my concern is more like the previously when she's unconscious, like from the time that she gets separated to the time that she finds the other two. Like
it seemed like she had been dragging the dude for a while. They were pretty long tracks. So I think some like
she's
time
almost
did
out
actually
of
pass.
Yeah.
And it's like I kind of like. At the same time, I expect a lot of time to pass, but then how are these two people have not already been eaten? Mm-hmm. I mean, these things are out there, like, actually hunting for them and screwing around with
so.
Them.
I don't know
no,
how much
I
they're
think
actually
they're,
hunting.
Like, no, I don't think they're actually hunting. I think they're stuck to, like, Big Cthulhu. And, like, so it's only the stray ones that they come across.
I mean, there were a bunch of them that were, like, nesting at the other station that were separate from the big one.
Creepy.
But I don't know what they're doing or why really what they're up to. I don't think they're really
arms and legs hanging and like it's so creepy. Like have you guys seen The Ritual? I know Austin hasn't, but have you
I haven't seen it yet.
Fuck. Like
I've seen the monster, parts of it.
The monster in that movie is so fucking scary and effective, and it does like a little bit of the same things that these monsters do.
The giant. Would it just be fair to call it a deer made of like body parts?
I don't know what the fuck it is.
Bones and stuff. It's
like
tight.
An evil like forest demon or something. I don't know. It's scary as shit though.
Now everybody that I know that goes like diving and stuff always carries a knife on them. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised that these suits don't have anything like attached for cutting.
Well, he did say, get my knife. And she said, I can't reach it.
Get his. Why don't she got a knife?
Yeah, so
on
there
her?
Was a knife somewhere, I guess.
I don't know why she didn't have a knife, but he did say, grab my knife. And that's how he kills the monster that's like attacking her.
They need a utility belt.
Yeah. Or like something attached to their suits that they put on. Because you know it's just a tool, you know. Yeah.
There was a wall of tools that they took the nail guns or whatever from. So maybe they just didn't
outfit themselves. Yeah, they didn't prepare adequately for this
amateurs.
Like incredibly risky trip.
Well, at that point, they didn't know that there were things, right?
No,
they just thought we have.
But
to
you
walk
also
over
need
there.
To prepare yourself. Like anything can happen down there, and like they said that too.
You're not gonna fight an earthquake with a knife. So I guess they
no,
were
but
really
like things could happen.
It.
Like you could get
things
tangled
could,
in something, or you know.
I'm also surprised that they didn't have anything to actually carry stuff with, and I say that under the guise of they talked about their oxygen filters. And I'm like, okay, well, what if something happens and your oxygen filter gets damaged or it didn't last as long as you thought? So you needed to replace it or do something to it whenever you got to like your next stopping area, because they were smart enough to like take their helmets off. So they weren't having to use it at like every opportunity.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like the other guy, I think his name was Max, like his got damaged. So, like, he was already kind of screwed.
There's nobody named Max.
Smith. I don't know where I got Max from. Yeah, Nora, Emily, Paul, Captain.
There are only seven characters in this movie.
Rodrigo.
So many names. I can't remember their names either, though.
And then Lee.
Yeah. But they said when we get to the midway station, we'll clean out the rebreathers. But then they do get to the midway station almost.
And I don't see no cleaning.
And they don't. And then she's at the external site and there's no cleaning. And then they're at the other one and there's no cleaning.
Well,
so
when
I don't
she's
know.
At the external site, she switches suits.
She switches suits. Yeah. Which.
Because her filter was messed up. It shows it. It's supposed to be blue. It shows it. Yeah. And it's like murky. And
but
brown.
Do you have to replace the whole. Like it seemed like they needed equipment to put the suits on in the other place.
No,
and then
not
she puts that one on.
Not
her,
really.
They're
I
heavy
think
to. Like,
they are
to
heavy.
Resist
yeah.
The pressure.
I don't know. I'm not. I don't care. I know you guys like care about like details and like do the mechanics of everything match up in every part of the movie, but like I don't give a shit about that.
Well,
I think what the movie was trying to do, it did exactly what it wanted to, and so.
Except
I don't really have very much
there.
Criticism. Like, I don't understand how the creature that killed TJ Miller got inside. Because we see where the water's leaking from, and it's not a full puncture. It's just, you know, like, it's a leak, but it's not all the... Because if it were all the way open, they'd be dead anyway.
Yeah, it
so, yeah. How the fuck did that thing get inside?
It's not water.
Like, it doesn't make water. It doesn't make any sense. So like that, I didn't like that. That was like unbelievable. And while it was happening, I was like, where did that fucking thing come from? This ship is sealed. They didn't let it in. So like that didn't make any sense to me at all. So while I was watching it, that threw me off. And also that Kristen Stewart is apparently
Eminem.
Super straight, which is really the most unbelievable thing in like a deep sea, like drilling in the Marianas Trench, Cthulhu comes alive thing, is that she looks like that and she's supposed to be a straight girl.
Well, but do we think
it's not accurate? They're queerbaiting hard, I'm telling you.
Do we know that maybe she went and like shaved her hair off and stuff after he was killed?
Maybe, but like, does that make it different. It's still queer. I think it's still like they're queer coding her character. Like that's a thing that like everything about her character, except for I have this picture of a dead fiance. Yeah. Like everything about it is coded to like she's a queer woman until it gets to that. So it's very strange.
Well, it's at the beginning, though, she in her narration in the bathroom, she says the something about the last thing he told me.
That was her dad. Like,
fingering
she was talking about her dad. She said my dad the last thing he told
the dog tags or whatever and so it's not
it was her dad.
Well,
I was listening.
I also wasn't judging her by her appearance when she said that she was straight.
Well, it seems more like
this is a like queer coding is a thing that many movies and TV shows like a lot of media outlets do this where they put things that are like, I don't know. I know what you're thinking. All right. Like, I can see your face. I know you're going to be like, well, that's stereotyping gay people. So you're not allowed to do that.
Nope. I am not the gay.
Except I think she is probably the gay.
Well, it seems like it could be maybe.
I mean, like it's like
practical,
like, right? Like she's it's like
doing engineering and wearing diving suits. And
No. I think it's just that they're not fucking like.
Well, but why they present can't that way if it's not going to be? Except to really they just trying to like
because it's bring trendy in,
bring
and
in
hot.
The gays or
what? Yeah, because like, it's trendy and hot.
Wouldn't it be more trendy just to make her a lesbian to begin with?
No. Because you still have to make her like attainable for like the male audience so that they find her attractive too.
She is underwater at the Mariana Trench.
No, that doesn't matter.
She dies in an explosion.
That doesn't matter.
I don't care about her. I'm trying to screw Cthulhu.
That is not the way that it works.
Death by water.
See, she's telling me that's not the way how it works, but I'm sitting right here being like, it didn't work for me.
Okay, well, then you're different, but I'm just saying.
Over here judging people. Shame.
Instead of mailing it.
Nope.
It's not really judging. It's more like,
nope.
I don't know. It's okay. So like in Bend It Like Beckham, right? Both of the girls are very queer coded and yet somehow they both like dudes and the same dude, in fact, and it's like this weird love triangle thing. But both actresses have since said, no, those characters should have been gay. And they're talking about making a sequel and like producing it themselves where the characters are gay. So, like, many people think this way about queer-coded characters and have for, like, decades. This is a thing. There's, like, whole fields of, like, academic research devoted to this. You're, like, you've got this, like, I don't believe you, and, like, well, I'm like, confused, and you're, like, rubbing your forehead.
I don't care.
Well, I don't care, but I do, so well, I'm talking about it.
Well, the thing is, it's, like, they don't own the characters. They don't own the show. They don't own the movie. They don't own the script. They don't own the concept. They don't own the idea.
Well, they but those things belong to their audience once they're out in the open. They belong to the audience, not the creators
and
anymore.
So if the creator is like, no, this is how I created the character. It doesn't matter. That's how they created it. And I'm not going to sit there and judge the character. And I'm not going to sit there and judge
the actor.
I'm
just saying that it was
based off
unbelievable.
Of what someone else wants.
No, I'm just saying in this movie, it was unbelievable to me that she was straight.
And that's fine.
Okay.
She said she was. And I'm not going to judge her for it.
Well, I'm not judging her. I'm judging the writers.
And?
Well, I'm allowed to.
They got paid.
Okay.
And what'd that have to do with the story? Did it affect the story in some way in a positive or negative
function?
Well,
that's not how I watch movies. Like, it doesn't matter. Like I just said,
so
it doesn't matter to me.
You watched a movie with a
like,
character in it, but you don't see, that's where I'm more confused. Is if the movie says, here's a character, here's what features of character X, and you're like bypassing all of this. And I'm like, no, like we're talking about these characters in the movie, not the characters in the perception of other people.
What? I'm talking about my perception of them. Which is exactly what reviewing a film is about.
But that's fine if you think that they should have been lesbians or
no
whatever.
I'm not saying she should have been. I'm saying that was something in the movie I didn't believe. We're talking about things that we have criticisms of, right? And that was one of the things that I didn't believe. I just didn't believe it.
Okay.
like Austin didn't believe that it's actually Cthulhu, but
I think it's just like it's kind of cheating to try to attach it to this other like pre-existing thing. Like just say you made a thing. Like that's it's not like they can say that, but like it's not, I don't think that adds anything to it.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you on that. Because I watched the interview with him and Mr. H, and he did talk about like the whole like Cthulhu mythos, and then trying to have enough parallels to it where it's like what you see at the end is supposed to air quotes be Cthulhu.
Like, it could be like Cthulhu, like the thing in Aquaman is, but it doesn't have to literally be Cthulhu.
Well, no, because if you're looking at like the whole, oh, sorry, like the big Kraken thing in Aquaman, that's not like Cthulhu.
No, but it's supposed to be very Lovecraft in the way that it's presented.
Well, it's not even about being Lovecraftian. It's this concept of what Cthulhu is, and then having something that is supposed to be such a close visual representation of Cthulhu in a manner that you would expect Cthulhu to originate or come from, being the deep, where it's like, hey, he's supposed to come from deep underneath the water. We're deep underneath the water. Here's this thing. It's got the tentacle stuff. It's huge. It has wings. It's supposed to be, air quote, Cthulhu. A lot of it doesn't match. Like, you have, like, the deep ones being, like, the fish people. And that's not something we get. We get miniature versions of the giant creature, because that's what we see.
Well, they're not really, though, because they're kind of, like, humanoid, almost. Like, they look very... Yeah,
the big thing was humanoid. It had arms and it had the big wings. It was just too big for us to see, like, below the waist.
Below the surface of the sea. Far, far below. In impenetrable darkness. At unimaginable pressure. In a world which no human being has ever entered. They are about to make a startling discovery. Not all aliens come from space.
But like, if no one's
that's
ever been
the
down
Deep Star
there.
6 trailer. That's the closest thing, I think.
Yeah. I would say, other than the whole we're going to end the world with our underwater alien creature magic stuff, this does have a closer resemblance to that than I think Aliens.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I rewatched Alien today because all these film reviews of this movie that say it's exactly like it's Alien. Not. And I was like, well, maybe I'm misremembering what Alien was like. And the feeling of the entire movie is totally different.
No, it doesn't feel like it's not the same at all.
It's not even close. It doesn't even have like similar moods or anything. So I don't get it.
Yeah, like this one was much, much faster paced compared to like the slow crawl.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why they would try to... have that
and there's nothing inside.
It's
they're not.
Not
trapped inside with a thing.
And this one is more just like all of this stuff is happening and it's like tense and stressful and scary. But in Alien, it's more like there's a story happening. Like there, like, and the characters are more important, I think, than in this.
Yeah. Well, the most
or at least more fleshed out.
Most important scene in Alien is the breakfast scene. And there's nothing like that in this.
Mm-mm.
We don't get to know anybody.
No. And we don't even get to know her before all the stuff starts.
No.
Like, it's just immediate.
They're not even breaking any health protocols.
No, there's nothing happening at all.
Like, the only thing that I can really see being a connection would be, here's an evil corporation, here's somewhere that people normally wouldn't go, it's kind of like space, because, you know, it's super deep underwater, and then there's a thing, maybe plural.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and that's about it.
The evil corporation thing. We should
that's
talk about
evil.
That because evil corporation of evil. That there is this, like the opening and closing titles made me think a lot of the like the monarch stuff that they do in the Godzilla and King Kong movies, where it's like things being redacted and zooming in on spy photos and newspaper articles and government denies and cover up ? And like it seemed like they were doing something like that, but they do it at the beginning. Like at the end it makes sense because they're covering up what happened. They're just like, ah, it was a drilling disaster. But they do it at the beginning where they're like, deep drilling company suspect, like there's suspicion in the opening before anything has happened. And so I don't know if they were like drilling for Cthulhu instead of oil. It doesn't really seem like, but it's weird that there's suspicion before anything happens. And then also they cover it up and are apparently allowed to just as an oil company.
Was it suspicion or just like criticism against the company for drilling at all? Because maybe, like, it seemed like even the employees had like intense criticisms about like, we should not be drilling in the bottom of the seafloor.
Well, one of the things that I had, but because I pick up people talking about this before I actually got to watch it, because I watched it today, you know, after work, that was one of the things I was trying to pay attention to, is that supposedly this movie had a lot of business propaganda like throughout it, not so much like for the viewer, but for the characters.
It's yeah.
Like mm-hmm. as the character living in this situation,
right.
Here's the business propaganda they go through.
Right.
And some of this stuff I don't have a complaint about, because I can understand that it's like, hey, as a company, we have to inform you that working and doing this stuff by yourself is against our policy. But for your safety, we want to tell you, work with a buddy. And so it's like, I can understand stuff like that yeah. being common and not so much propaganda, because that like that's a tied to like a safety kind of thing.
Well, I didn't even think of that as being business. I don't think that's what it is. I think that was a like, the buddy system works. It's against company policy to be alone.
Yeah.
While she's alone and thinks that she's the only one left alive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it's supposed to just be like, to intensify the stress and to be a dichotomy.
Party.
It's not supposed to be like they're not by and large the oil company, I don't think.
Yeah.
But they're although there is in the control room at the scene in the end, that's like there's a thing looping that sounds like some
voice,
kind of
yeah.
Some kind of commercial for the company where like, we have big things in store. But then there it's still used as irony, not as like straight up propaganda.
Yeah. Well, like for us, it's that irony because mm-hmm. we are with them during the disaster, not with them during the like their normal daily lives
right.
being underwater. But like
you never see the station before it
yeah.
explodes except for the bathroom.
Now we do see a little bit of that because we get to see like the hallways as she starts to run off. Right.
Yeah.
Like
just before
this. People were talking about just how bad the facility that she was in looked. And so
what do you mean how bad it looks?
Like just like how it looked like it was worn down. Like it wasn't built properly. It was gringy.
Yeah.
Like it didn't look like
a
properly
it's an oil
handled.
Rig.
Well, it's not an oil rig.
Well, what is it?
That's
no,
where their
this
house.
Is their they're like
yeah,
sleeping
but it's
facility.
Still an oil, it's still
no,
it's part
separate.
Of an oil rig.
No, the oil rig was separate. That's what they had to walk to.
Yeah, like the actual drilling rig part was that
was
other building
really
that was
separate.
Further away.
It was the Roebuck, the thing at the end.
They were in the housing area that
yeah.
connected them to the surface. That's why they had to take the elevator to go down, because that's where the people were working, like all that kind of stuff. Like they were in the normal housing units.
Mm-hmm.
But like that area looked so bad. That it's this idea where here's this company and they're just building these horrible facilities that are dangerous to be in anyways, and then putting the people in there. And then so when the movie gets started and all this stuff happens, you don't know it's giant Cthulhu dude actually smacking stuff around. It feels more like it's an earthquake.
Yeah.
And the earthquake causes things to break.
Construction.
And it's just like, oh, well, because we suck, this earthquake is going to cause us all to implode. And then it's just like, mm-hmm. well, maybe it wasn't so bad, but I don't know, it could be at this point. We know this thing's trying to crush us anyways. And then you have like the follow up at the end where it is literally, here's the government covering things up. Here is the drilling corporation going right back at it.
I had a question
for the
about
third
that
time.
Too. So it says at the end that there are two survivors. But when Nora meets up with the captain, he says, I've already sent 22 people up.
Yeah.
So like, are we supposed to assume that none of those 22 pods made it up?
I don't
think they all got like break off creatured. I don't think they made because they start chasing after them when those.
Well, we
pods
know
start
at least one
up,
did
so.
For sure. But they didn't see any of the other ones, like.
Yeah, we know one they found. We only found, yeah, to the ground, but
we only saw them find one.
Well, the only thing, because I was thinking about that, but the what I was first imagining after the whole redacted kind of stuff would be that the company found them and then got rid of them, and then they thought that was all of it.
They didn't know anything about the monsters, though, because they got out before.
Well, see, that's where the first rig comes from.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So between some speculation.
Okay.
Between some stuff that the director himself said.
Okay.
And then me just kind of putting some pieces together.
Okay.
I'm under the current assumption, until more actually comes out official, the first rig has run into these things before.
Oh.
But not the big one. That's where the first living area was.
And that's why they moved.
And they had to move. Oh,
okay.
And that's why the captain is kind of losing his mind.
Because he already knows something.
But yeah. And one of the things the director had said is about the captain. And in the whole mythos kind of ordeal with Cthulhu is you kind of lose your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that was happening.
Everybody in Lovecraft stories loses their mind.
Yeah. And so
everything
like,
makes you lose your mind.
And so you have like this guy, and I think he's kind of trapped himself within this small period of time. So he's gotten older and he doesn't understand because, you know, time and moments and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he's lost himself because he still thinks that his deceased daughter is 14.
No, like
when we see the picture.
No, she died 14. When she 14. Yeah, when she was 14. I think that he was he was leading them all to believe that she was still alive, and he forgot to keep up that pretense when he was scared and under pressure. And
I think that's part of him losing his mind. Like he knows that he's starting to like fade, but he's got to put up a front.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's like these little pieces that I'm trying to like see if they align.
I mean, that would make the suspicious company is suspicious in the opening titles makes sense, but it didn't I didn't feel like that in the actual movie. Like it just seemed like, oh well, we tried drilling over here and we didn't find any oil, so we moved over there. But that could be, I guess. Now all of this, like the director says this and the director says that, like if it's not in the movie it doesn't really count. Like you should have put it in the movie.
Yeah.
This is what you meant. And yep. So it's cheating. It's like It's not like the books don't count. Like you can't just say like, oh well, I meant this actually, but I didn't put it in the movie.
Yeah, that's why like this is just like pure speculation for like how it's kind of made. Now we're supposed to get like another 14 minutes on the DVD release.
Oh shit!
Yeah, because he said there was like a ton of stuff that they had made, and then once they looked at it, they were like, we can't put this in here. That's a whole bunch of making the story super slow. Oh yeah, it'll fix a whole bunch of questions anyone might have, but the pacing is shocked.
Well, then it shouldn't be in there. Like that's what editing is.
And I don't,
that's why he cut it out.
Like this is interesting. Like everything that you're saying is interesting to me. But like what is in the movie, I think is good. So yeah. Like I don't care that it's not there.
Like I'm interested in this amount of time just because it's like, okay, well this is supposed to be air quote official story. But at the same time, you know, like I know the movie doesn't need it because the movie was already enjoyable without it.
Right.
All right. Complain about T.G. Miller.
Well, I already have. Like anytime he's there, he makes a wisecrack every 5 or 10 seconds or so and breaks whatever tension or fear might be taking place in the otherwise scary events while he's there. And I spent the like 35 minutes of the movie that he's in waiting and hoping for him to get killed so that the movie could get scary again like it was at the beginning. And then it happened. And so the movie is like 75% really good and scary. And then the rest is the part that contains T.J. Miller.
Now, I understand where you're coming from with this whole breaking the tension.
That's what humor is for. That's what like and. Like when you,
but it's clear also that it doesn't really work for the characters. Like they're not laughing with him. They're not in on the jokes with him. They are annoyed by him too, just like I was. Yeah. So, and if you think about like if you're actually in this life or death situation and somebody is over there just nonstop making fucking sarcastic jokes and like saying stuff, like I would be pissed. I would be like, that doesn't make the situation better for anyone. It doesn't help. I don't think you're funny. I'm not in a mood to laugh right now. Like I'm about to die. Please stop.
Well, I think I've talked about the valve puzzle from Duke Nukem Forever on the show before, haven't I?
I think so.
But I'll tell it again anyway. In Duke Nukem Forever, there are a number of things that are making reference to other video games and video game companies instead of just like making cracks about things in general or like culture at the time. He spends a lot of time and there's a lot of things, not just him talking about things that are references to other things. And there's one that is, they don't call it anything. There's a sequence that they don't call any of them anything, but they don't call this one anything. But it's just known in the community as the Valve puzzle, which is supposed to be making some kind of crack at Valve for having puzzles in their video games or something, except it doesn't work on like three different levels, because like puzzles in games made by Valve are good and not like bad or annoying, even if they're like complicated and difficult until you figure them out. But that's what they're for. So they make this, there's like a wall of valves and Duke has to like turn the valves and get things in the right order in order to make something happen. I don't even remember, but it's really complicated and it takes forever for him to even turn the valves, and it slows down everything and it sucks to do. It brings a halt to the fun. And while this is going on, while you're thinking this really sucks, this isn't fun, Duke is saying to himself that this sucks and this isn't any fun. So he knows and they know making it, but that doesn't change that it still isn't fun and that it still sucks. And so like, even if the characters are annoyed by TJ Miller, so am I. And so it's still just annoying. And so it's still detrimental. Even if everyone knows this is annoying, it's still annoying. And just being aware that it's annoying doesn't make it less annoying or make it better. And so I still didn't care. Like if you watch a Hitchcock movie, like Hitchcock understood that you couldn't just like take people in the form of a violin string and just hold it at both ends and just stretch it and stretch it and stretch it and stretch it for 2 hours of a movie, because eventually you're going to break before you get there and then you're going to stop caring. But if every now and then like you stretch and you stretch and then like you just release it a little bit, then you can continue stretching after that and you can keep people at least thinking that they were on edge the entire time, even though it's broken up here and there, so that you can sustain suspense and tension. And so like this is a well understood thing that you can use comedy relief to break tension so that then the tension is intensified when it comes back. But if you break the tension continuously, then you just don't have any tension. And that's what it was for me with him. And I was too annoyed to be afraid. And that wasn't any kind of benefit. And it's a shame, because the things that were happening while he was there would have been really scary, but I was too busy being annoyed by him in order for them to be effective the way that the rest of the movie was.
Now, I'm going to disagree, but I'm going to disagree based off of almost everything that he does is either more of a, I'm going to say this kind of outward, and anyone who reacts to it. And then the ones that he has as a more like I'm directly talking to someone has very little impact. Like normally whenever he tells the fish hitting the brick wall, mm-hmm. like no one's actively doing anything because it's like a wait period. You know, like we're waiting for like someone to finish walking down the corridor while we wait. He makes a comment to someone. Mm-hmm. And I can under things like that, breaking tension, because we are waiting with the rest of the characters for said thing to begin.
Well, that moment is a little different anyway, because he's not telling that on purpose to try to break tension or try to be comic relief, because he like laughs to himself and they're like, why are you laughing?
Yeah,
and then so he has to explain the dumb thing that he's laughing about, and it falls and everybody's like, that's dumb. Yeah. And like they have that look on their face, you know, like this is a dumb thing. But also, like, he wasn't taking it upon himself to be like, oh, I have to say something to to lighten the mood.
But then you would have him, he's like talking outwards about like the whole, like there's like the body.
Yeah, during the dive is when he's especially damaging.
And I'm going to, see, that's the thing is like, if I'm in that and I'm out there, you're like, oh, you're safe inside your little submarine thing. I don't care. I don't give a shit about how you feel.
He's trying to keep himself from being scared.
Yeah,
but he's also keeping me from being scared. So in that case, realism.
Well, it's this thing of like
collide.
It's this thing of like, and I do know people like this, like in real life who do this, where they have to like keep saying things and keep like trying to be funny just so they can pretend to hold on to this, like, I'm a cool guy and I'm not scared by anything because I'm a man kind of thing. I know people that are like that, and I don't agree. Like, I think that it's very, what's the word? It's putting on a front, you know, like that's not who they really are, but it's who they think they're supposed to be or something.
Well, and because that does feel like what I would expect a real person to do. It's easier for me to tone him out. Matter of fact, one of my favorite scenes is him handing the rabbit to the lady. And if you lose this, I'm going to haunt you.
Well, the
The
rabbit, like, people continue to care about the rabbit. Like, they carry the rabbit around after he died. They look at it and they start to cry. And I don't understand why, because nobody seemed to like him while he was alive. And so then, like, now that he's dead, now we care, I guess.
No, I think they did like him in a, like,
I mean, he's a person, I guess. So it's still sad that he died.
But also, I mean, like, Smith liked him. Like, he was, like, smiling.
Yeah,
like they were. I mean, not laughing at his jokes, but like they seemed to like his presence.
They were pipe repair buddies.
Yeah.
That's why Smith's like, no, I'm taking this. Mm-hmm. You know, because he knew how he was supposed to do stuff. They were experienced.
But
divers.
The bunny at the end being like tape measured and like the evidence photos is hilarious.
Funny. That was the only thing related to T.J. Miller that I thought was funny, was the rabbit being measured in the evidence photo. And I don't know why it was there.
It was so funny.
What they could possibly have been doing.
It was really great.
But that was funny.
Boy, that stupid rabbit. Like, here, it's your turn to watch over Mr. Fluffums.
Was that his name?
No, I just
it had a name. I can't remember. He says it a bunch, so I should.
Did he?
I was too busy being
I just
annoyed,
heard him say bunny, I thought.
I think he used a name sometimes.
I want TJ Miller's phone number. I'll just call him up like, bro. Remember when y'all were filming
underwater?
What did
you call the bunny?
Like, what the hell were you calling that rabbit? Do you even remember?
Like. So they're going to drill for more Cthulhu then.
I guess.
Well, I think the same thing is just going to happen again. Like, they're just going to get it set up and then be attacked again. So that's a question that I have, too, though. So, like, there's this narrative, maybe, that people who are watching it think that the corporation is evil and might know what's happening. But isn't it possible that they don't know? Because, again, like, all the footage was destroyed. All the evidence was destroyed.
Well, the article says it was the destroyed.
How could it not have been? She blew it up.
Well, no, it's not that. It's like you have the people who came back.
Right. But they were underwater with oxygen deprivation and, like, pressure sickness and stuff. Like, you know, there are reasons to dismiss their story.
Well, okay, so from what I'm seeing is, one, we do not know what they are drilling for exactly.
Right.
We only know corporation.
We assume oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we know here's corporation, or here's gas. Shady business, and here is drilling for X. Mm-hmm. We know that this is not the first time. This is at least the second time. Mm-hmm. We know there is shady business between the beginning and the second. So either there's something that is so important to them that they... Well, it could be simply money, but I'm sure there's easier and cheaper ways to get money than, you know, like, oh, we need to build another 5 facilities and throw them in the Mariana Trench. We don't want to die, because if we die, we can't make money. That's right. I want that on a shirt, too. or it could actually be like Cult of Cthulhu stuff. Mm-hmm. And hey, we're the corporation and we have the money and we're trying to resurrect, you know, our tentacly boy.
Well, done.
Which is the alien thing.
And there we go.
Weyland Yutani has been after the alien for the whole time, apparently, according to the Prometheus era movies, which I don't particularly care for that bit of narrative that he's attempting to add.
No, Waylon was after the engineer.
Yeah, but then the it becomes the alien. Like, now David is at, or not David. Is it David?
David wants to David? Make David the wants perfect to
make,
machine.
Make the alien.
Yeah.
So that, and that's where we are. And then we've been there for like, what, 3 years now, and we haven't had another movie yet.
Yeah, thank God. No, wait. I think it's been about 2 years, maybe, since Covenant. Maybe. I could have swore it was.
I think it's got to be longer than that, because we had it at the theater, and that's been 2 years almost since it closed. In May, it'll be 2 years. So
it would have been three.
Has it been like late 17 or something?
So we talked about the importance of the music in Sucker Punch in the last episode. The music here is not especially important, except that it's effectively frightening and supportive of the frighteningness. But the Marco Beltrami, who composed the music, we've had other movies on the show, several other movies by him on the show, because he did the music for Scream. He did the music for The November Man. He did the music for the first Hellboy movie. So we've had his music around a number of times. A Quiet Place. He did the music for A Quiet Place, which is relatedly frightening. So,
well, on top of that, for anyone who actually stays through the credits, there's two tracks that are mentioned within the credits. I don't remember hearing either one of them.
Oh, like licensed tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but there was SpongeBob SquarePants, and I didn't even catch it.
What?
Yeah.
Where?
Exactly.
Where was it?
What?
It's in the licensing, but it ain't there.
Where? Maybe it was cut out.
Maybe.
Maybe it's in one of the scenes that was cut out.
That's weird. there was a license.
How are you watching TV at just 6 miles under the ocean? VHS tapes?
Oh, it was the cable.
I guess they had, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, there was a license song when they were like getting into the diving suits, because he walks over to the radio and turns it up really loud. And like, which I actually liked, because it did feel like a video game scene, like where you're like about to suit up and like go out on the quest.
Can you turn that down?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
which, you know, we've talked about it commonly that we appreciate what's called source music, which is music that becomes part of the soundtrack that's anchored into the world of the movie somehow.
It would have been super awesome if they would have played like the intro to Doom's Lullaby, or the Doom Lullaby when they started suiting up. It's the soundtrack to the Doom video game.
Going room to room.
I mean, I like the way that they did it. Like, I thought it was good.
No.
Because I think putting like video game music when they're like starting out on their journey, like that would feel like cheap kind of, and like expected, but having him be like, oh, this is my idea of what should be happening right now, like that makes sense to me. It feels right.
I was okay that there was almost no character depth.
Yeah. That's fine with me too, because that's not what you're watching the movie for.
No, well, and this isn't really a like a disaster movie, you know, in the way that we only do on the like 70 whatever, what is it, 74, is that the episode numbers that we do it on? 70 something, I should remember because it's important, but like, it's not that, you know, it's not Poseidon Adventure, Towering Inferno, Hindenburg, like it's not that, but there is a like people having to get through a circumstance while things continue to get worse and worse, and more people get killed, and there's only a few people left who actually escape at the end. Like, that sort of structure is still there, even though it's in sort of a monster movie kind of context. And generally, you don't get to know the characters very much, except in the things that they argue with each other about as they go through the difficult circumstance, or the things that they say. You don't spend a lot of time with them. And, or even if you do spend a lot of time with them in something like Titanic, which is largely a classic disaster movie in structure also, that you do spend, you know, 3.5 hours with these people by the end of it, because it's a long movie and you get to learn some things about some of them, but a lot of them you don't, and it's not important. You just need a few basic things so that you care maybe a little bit when they get rubbed out one by one, but not so much that it's like you can't take it anymore as more and more people die. Like, you can't know them.
Because, like, I almost feel like when he says rub out, it makes me think of like some Italian mobsters are underwater with him and just kills them one by one.
Do you remember there's a cartoon where there's a guy that is like a pencil, like he's shaped like a pencil and he has an eraser on the top of his head and he's supposed to be like a gangster kind of character and he threatens to rub people out all the time. And when it actually happens, he like erases them out of the frame of the cartoon with his eraser head.
I feel like that's in a collection that has like old Superman and like Betty Boop in it.
I don't think it's that old. I think it's kind of like Chuck Jones sort of period of time, but I can't remember for sure. I'm sure somebody knows. It actually isn't. I shouldn't even have said it that way because it's not an appropriate usage of rub out, because rubbing someone out is a deliberate action. They're just happen to be getting killed by circumstance, which is different from getting rubbed out
or eaten.
Yeah.
Death by water.
No, by many monster things. Listen, all right, Russell, man, stop.
Yeah.
Okay, also, so
Darren Aronofsky, the most bogus Bible movie ever.
So it's like it opens up its mouth. I'm like, okay, that's kind of terrifying. And it starts to eat you.
Which thing? Cthulhu or the tiny thing?
The smaller Cthulhu.
Okay, yeah.
Like the big, but it's not massive.
I'm, I'm a python eat you right now.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was terrifying.
And so it's eating you, and I'm like in full panic mode. But there's like a point where I almost just as I'm watching her, I can't help but just stop and go, how is this working? I'm not a fish. I am not a fish. It's not like this thing is like trying to punch me in the gut and then like, all right, now I'm going to actually bite into you. No, it's trying to swallow me whole. And that's where like.
And then what?
And then it's just like, well, I could just pull my knife out and cut right through it. But they ain't got those on them.
It's a little Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black, where like he's inside the thing and then he's going to shoot his way out.
Oh,
like,
that's I think you guys are talking about different parts, maybe.
No.
I'm not talking about the tiny things. I'm talking about like whenever she gets eaten whole as they're almost towards the end.
Yeah. Oh yeah, okay. Like so that. You are talking about. Yeah, well, she had the gun.
Well, I know she like shot her way out. But that's what I'm saying. It's just like watching her in that situation. It gets to the point where it's just she's nothing's really happening. Mm. She's just slowly being eaten whole. So it's not like it ripped her arm off. Or it's like sunk its teeth into her and punctured her suit.
Yeah, and she's
just
in metal armor. So.
Like she's just straight being eaten whole, and it's just like, here, let me just take out my pea shooter and just blast right through it, and it's just dead. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh my god! Like
there, but then there are like 50 other ones right there,
and they're all fucking looking at her with those like glinting eyes. Oh my god, those eyes!
Man, takes like some of that deep sea duct tape. Just a big ass knife right there in my left hand. Be like, all right, boys, let's do this.
Oh, you know, okay. So we talked about a couple of things. There was something that did bother me when it happened. And I turned to Austin and I was like, that's bullshit. It's because she says when they find that the passageway is blocked and she has to like go check it out, she says, let me go. I'm the smallest, but they're all wearing the same fucking size suits. So I'm like, what the fuck? I was so mad about that.
Okay, so
they're all the same size in these stupid suits.
They're actually not.
They are.
They act, whenever they drop down, they show us a head over view, and it's so dumb.
She's shorter, but
it's dumb
she's
because
not like
you can see that
their
it's
shoulders
a circle
are
of
not.
Who's large and who's small.
Mm. And it should not
it's
be.
Dumb. It's, yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Like they're going to be the same width. Like she is shorter, yes, but like they're the same width.
Now, on the other side of that, you actually see them together, and Emily is smaller than she is.
Yeah.
Because like her suit is not properly shaped for her, so she is wearing like the smallest thing ever, and you can just see her. It's like in her face.
It's all collapsing down on her because she's too small. Well, because she doesn't have a suit,
exactly. Right. And it's just like no, like we know that that's a bullshit line.
Okay. Also,
but
and
the helmets have to be the same size because they interchange them all the time. Yeah.
And the okay, so another TJ Miller line that was good was when they were like, well, somebody has to go outside and check it out, and he said, okay, Emily, it's your time to shine. And like, that was funny. Like, that actually made me laugh. And like, it was good because no one in the scene laughed or anything, and they were all like, what the fuck? And then he was like, I'm just kidding. And like, so that worked. That joke worked.
I laughed.
Yeah, me too.
I laughed internally because I'm in the theater and I'm like biting my tongue.
It does seem like, yes, she's a research assistant, but she's like 6 miles under the ocean. And she's been there for several months now, and it's like a generally scary circumstance that she should be a little less timid maybe than she is by now.
Well, when we got home, I talked to you about how, like, if I were in some kind of situation like that. Okay, so the thing about me is that I'm really fucking terrified. Like, I love the ocean. I love water. I love swimming. I love, like, ocean creatures. Like, my favorite animal is an octopus. I have a jellyfish tattoo on my arm. Like, I fucking love sea creatures. However, being in deep, dark, like, oppressive water and, like, having unknown creatures, that is one of the, like, that is one of my biggest like, I'm almost going to cry, like, just thinking about, like, deep, dark water and, like, all of these things. And so if I were in this situation where I have to, like, go out into open water, like, I would not do it. I would probably just sit, like, everyone would be, like, going down, and I'd be like, I'm not fucking going. I'm going to sit here and cry and, like, not move, and I will die this way instead of that way. Like,
don't worry. I would leave you there.
Well, that's fine. I would expect you to. And if you tried to drag me, I would punch you in the face or something. Like,
do you think that that's true, though?
Yes.
Isn't there something to,
well,
the, like,
first of all,
humans want to not
die? I don't have a survival instinct at all. Like, but that's my brain chemistry. So, like, like, I would not fight to stay. Like, I would not fight to go into something. Like, it's like a paralyzing fear. Like, when you have a paralyzing fear, you literally can't do it. Like, no matter, no, like, pep talk is gonna get you through it.
I'd use her as bait for one of the creatures.
Well,
start betting money.
You would.
I mean,
he would not.
From what, hey, from
like,
what
you would say, like, you say that you would, and even in the situation, you might make a joke, like, I would do this, but you wouldn't actually, because you're not a serial killer. So, do you
know,
like,
do you know why
if you
I would
kill
do
one
it?
One person, it's not a series.
That's right. Do you know why I would do it?
Why?
Because it tried eating her whole, and then a flare gun killed it.
Yeah. But probably, you didn't know that at the time. Like, you wouldn't know
just
that
saying.
At the time of, like,
I know it now.
Time to go.
And if for some reason we woke up and we were put in that situation, okay.
I'm saying you wouldn't have been able to get me into the suit in the first place. I would have locked myself in a closet or something. I would not go.
I'd be busy poking that lady's eyes, trying to get them closed.
Oh, I can't remember which one it's at the head of, and I don't have it isolated. So it would have been perfect. I don't have it. Like, there's the thing where you say, poke him again. I can't remember which one it's from.
Poke him again. Do it.
I have no idea which, I can't even think of which one it would be from.
I don't know why, but I'm thinking of Emperor Palpatine going through the order for Big Smoke.
I don't even think that I can imagine that. Like, you just said it to me and I'm trying. And I can't make it work. Like, I can't make, like, because the
like just like the Death Star, like, the just big, like, flying by like a planet that's the shape of like a burger joint.
The big smoke order is really, it's really dependent on his voice, I think, to work. It's not just the words that he says; it's the voice that he says them in. And so I don't know. I can't make this happen.
You know something I kind of wanted to see? If it didn't have it, so I'm not complaining, but it's just like, whenever they're in the thing, it doesn't matter what thing, they're in a thing, and then there's all the noise from the outside, and it's like, oh, well, what's this? And I don't remember what character it was, but they end up, like, touching something, and it makes, like a pat sound, and then there's, like, a reverse to it from the outside. I want to see something like dueling banjos. Not specifically dueling banjos, too complex. But I'm just saying, it'd be like, instead of it just being like, and then a reverse, it would just be like, doop, doop. Doop, doop. Mm-hmm. You know, something where it's like. But it's like okay, it's deliberately making this sound. Mm-hmm. Plus, they're underwater. Why do they have eyes? Why is the flashlight working?
I don't know.
Yeah, why do they have eyes? If they've been not just underwater, but underground underwater.
Well, the baby thing didn't have eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not. Which, like, I was so tense at the beginning of that scene because, like, I don't think either of you two have. But maybe somebody has read the Stephen King novel from a Buick 8. And if you have, you already know the scene that I'm talking about. But like, that's what it made me think of. And I thought, like, are we going to go here? And then they don't really go there because we don't have time for that because other things are happening. But I was much more tense at the beginning of that scene than I was as it progressed on. But it's because of external things. And so it's not fair. And so I don't count it.
But Pepperidge Farms counts it.
Do they?
I don't know. That's just what I thought hearing the music.
It's the beginning of dueling banjos.
Oh, well. It made me think of Pepperidge Farms.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying.
So how do we feel about stars?
I'm giving it 4. Like, my complaints are more or less cosmetic. And I can deal with cosmetic more than story. So I think it earns a 4. Maybe not like the most powerful 4 of like all, like this is not 4 Infinity Stones 4. This is like, you know, $4 and maybe like a dime. But you have to give the dime back to your mom because she wants all of the change.
So your complaints are?
I guess it's just movie shit.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
That could go on, well, a shirt too.
I give it a 4 also. Strong four, like almost. You're surprised
I'm
that
surprised.
I
thought you were gonna give it more than that.
Oh, a 5. Well, it is almost a 5. But it's just there's a little bit. I don't know.
A little bit.
There's a little bit that just doesn't feel. If I think it might be the TJ Miller stuff, like at the time I didn't think that it was, but that could be some of it. I'm not sure. There's just something about it that keeps it from a vibe. But in terms of how effective it was at making me tense and scared and like anxious and stressed, like I felt so stressed out watching this. And I mean, that's part of like my paralyzing fear is like deep, dark, open water and stuff. So like that did it for me. And like I left the theater with my shoulders and neck aching because I was tense so much the whole time. And my hand was aching too because I was like squeezing Austin really hard for a lot of it. But
so the real question is, if you're blind, would you have the same fear? Because you wouldn't be able to visually see.
Oh, you mean like if you went blind like right now?
No, I mean probably, like just like in general.
I actually probably because when you're underwater, like that takes away some more of your senses. And if you already don't have the sense of sight, like it's probably going to be even more scary to take more senses away from you.
I don't know. If you're blind and you're listening to us, have you ever been underwater at a depth? Probably with someone else. Just saying.
Noble pressure.
Mm-hmm. Nobody wants
but,
to be
like,
shocked
a lot of,
bait.
A lot of the criticisms that like I've seen of the movie in reviews have been like comparing it to other movies and making me angry because like if your brain can't hold more than one type of story in it, then you're not very imaginative or creative at all. And also, if you boil a story down to its main points, everything sounds like everything else anyway. So like I don't have any of those problems, and I liked it a lot.
Now, we compare things to other things commonly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily negatively, but just because it made us think of this or that, and it's not...
Well, there are certain types of film critics who, like, this reminded me of this, so it's terrible.
Yeah, therefore
because it's not its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that this was its own thing, I think.
I think so. Well, but see, the other thing is, I mean, you're not going to... I'm going to give it 4 also, because it would be better than that, except for the T.J. Miller part and, like, a few, like... technical things here or there, but even those would be really minor compared to the effectiveness of the rest of it. It's just that it's only 75% scary because for parts of it T.G. Miller's making wisecracks. But if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know that just because something is a kind of something that there are other somethings of
something
doesn't make it invalid. Cutthroat Island is like a good standard pirate movie, and everybody hated it at the time because they're like, it's just a standard pirate movie. And it's like, well, but they don't make pirate movies anymore. Even then, they didn't make pirate movies anymore, and now they don't make pirates anymore, except for occasionally Johnny Depp gets blackout drunk and makes a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and those aren't even that good anymore.
No,
and so terrible. Like, there are no pirate movies. But in, like, 1995 or whenever Cutthroat Island is, they weren't making pirate movies. And so having a good standard pirate movie was a fine thing to have. And, you know, we like a good standard disaster movie. And, like, I liked Skyscraper a lot because it felt very much like that. And we don't get those anymore. You don't get the big thing happens in a big building. You know, we talked about in the collateral damage episode how they had to delay it because they thought there was going to be sensitivity because 9/11 had just happened. And so they had to cut a bunch of stuff out and change it and just have it go. And then like action movies with large scale damage in them went away for like 10 years. And so we get like the Jason Bourne movies and things in that period of time where it's all small scale. People are fighting and like maybe the fate of the world is in balance because spies and stuff, but nothing really gets exploded. Except a car here or there. And so, like, we like good examples of pre-existing things, unless it's just straight up ripping it off. And you know, and then you have there's a hockey game that came out in like the late 90s that is the only zero that in a review that IGN has ever given. And the entire text of the review says, when they release a new game, we'll write a new review. Because what they actually did was they took the same game, they put a new title screen on it, and they put it in a box with a different title on the outside, and they released it as if it was a new hockey game. And so, like, if something like that happens, we're not likely to approve of that, because we have this over here, do something at least a little different. But a good example that reminds you of other good things is not a bad thing. Although it seems... to be to a lot of critics.
I don't know,
critics.
Like, how could you watch this? And the only thing that you think is, oh, well, that's a reference to this movie, and that's a reference to this movie, and therefore I don't feel anything right now. Like, I don't see how you watch this movie and not feel anything. Like, well, not feel some kind of anxiety or, like, oh, shit, this is serious. Or something.
I mean, we went to college with people who that early in there trying to be people who knew more about filmmaking than the average person were already the people who are just ruined. Yeah. Where like, I know how a movie is made, therefore I can't enjoy a movie anymore. Unless it's something that's like so far outside to the opposite edge of things where it's just like, oh, it's so artsy and filmmaking.
No, I
like
saw
those people like, and we hated those people. We didn't talk to those people. We didn't like being on projects with those people. And those people know who they are if they're listening to this show.
I so saw an don't. Amazing tweet yesterday on film Twitter. I can't remember what the like who the account was, but it said that there are like 5 stages of watching movies, and like the first 2 stages is the first stage is like liking everything, like all big budget stuff, like you just basically like everything. The second stage is that you hate the like the popular, like Michael Bay and like things that are like exploitative and like just there to things that have no substance, right? And then the third stage, which is like watching like art house movie, like accessible art house. So like A24 type stuff, indie stuff, like things that have a little bit more art, like artisticness to them. But you also like have a little bit of one and two thrown in there, too. And then stage four is where you like do this like post irony thing where you like go back to thinking Michael Bay is amazing and like unironically loving it, like all exploitation films and stuff. And then stage five is where you can't even watch a commercial without being pissed, so all you do is read or like play video games and you don't ever watch movies again because you're so like tired of them.
But I like Michael Bay.
Do you?
Sometimes. Oh.
I enjoy explosions and stuff.
But okay, did you watch the last Transformers movie?
Are you talking? Well, which one's the last?
The last Bay one was the last night.
That was the one where it's like Merlin had a staff. Yeah, I saw that one. I didn't say it was good.
Okay. You said I saw liked
tiny
it,
bits so of like, it because we had it at the theater, but I never watched it.
Like, and like the switching, switching perspective all the time happened,
format,
and like
the format switch between IMAX and scope. Yeah, because it did it like T.J. Miller making wisecracks. Like it did it like in like 5 second intervals half the time, where it was just like this piece of this shot is in IMAX and this piece is not, and it's like just stop.
Yeah, it would be in the middle of action scenes too, so it like really takes you like it's distracting. Yeah.
Well,
this is the thing that Nolan knew better than to do. He was like, this scene is going to be in IMAX.
Yeah,
and then like this next scene may not be, but it's going to be long sequences before you switch most of the time. Every now and then he would pull a switch, but it was slick enough that you didn't really see it, and it was uncommon.
Well, because the last night was brought up, I am an absolute 100% avid Godzilla fan, and in that community, there's a lot of people who will claim, "Hey, I like Godzilla; it's my favorite," and then proceed to skip every human interaction scene there is in any Godzilla movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just fans of Suitman technology.
They're just a fan of Suitman technology, which is fine. Some of that is awesome. But I like watching the human scenes because there is story there. Mm-hmm. And depending on the era and the movie, sometimes there's meaning they tried to sprinkle in because, you know, it's like the 60s and the 70s and people had things to say. But The Last Knight is the only Transformers movie that I would actively just skip any human interaction scene. Just because not only is it a mixture of completely unnecessary, but it is also detrimental to the story. It's just like, it's like, all right.
It's so, like negative story.
So like this right here, this person is talking and we could just have just mindless robot action violence. And there's more story in that than there is him opening his face.
It's like, everyone is now dumber for having heard this.
Listen, I would encourage you, if you feel the same way as Cloud, to watch the movie Revolt, which is like bananas, but it's like robot violence and it's not like terribly well made, but it skips all the like story that doesn't matter stuff. So that's great. And it has what is that guy's name? He plays Thranduil in the Hobbit movies.
If I could spell that, I would look it up and help you.
But I can't, so. He's like a British guy with like a like pretty boy face.
Well, there are only a few of those, so but I can't.
Sorry, sorry. He has a name that's either like two first names or something, I don't know, but anyway, it's a robot movie that's like just robot violence, and also they kind of look like the spitting dinosaurs from Jurassic Park with the fin around their head. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah
So that's cool. Anyway, that's The Last Night without story and without a budget.
And without being 3.5 hours or whatever The Last Night is.
Yeah,
it was Extinction that was the one before that one, right? The fourth one?
Fucking know.
Age of Extinction.
Age of Extinction. I thought that one was okay.
I can't remember the order of Transformers movies after three.
Like, I don't know the names of, like,
I think it must be, because there are only two Wahlberg ones, right?
Yeah.
So it must be Age of Extinction.
Okay, yeah. Because, like, I actually enjoyed the first Mark Wahlberg one. Mm. Because, like,
I haven't seen either one. The last Transformers movie I saw was Dark of the Moon.
Yeah. Because, like, they really do, they kind of go in and be like, all right, well, we're going to get rid of the cast of these people and we're going to redo some stuff. And we have to have interesting ways on, like, bringing them in. So Mark Wahlberg works at, like, a large scrapyard. And when I mean large, it's, like, huge. Mm-hmm.
It's like the scrapyard from Real Steel.
Yeah, it's, like, from Real Steel. And it's like, oh, yeah, some of the Autobots that are being hunted down are, like, hiding there. And he doesn't know about it until people show up. And he's like, what's going on? I'm just trying to run a business. And there's Autobots there. And it's just like, oh, my God, it's Autobots. And people, why are they hunting Autobots down? And, of course, Bumblebee's there because Bumblebee's a face. And then it's just like, well, things got to happen now. And then they have dinosaur robots, which are awesome. And then it's like, oh, we're melting them down for their original metal components and using that to make our own Transformers. But we're using Decepticon parts as well. And now they're turning evil on us. And for some reason, we can't remake Optimus Prime because he keeps turning out to be Megatron. And then you find out why. And then the movie immediately turns into a Chinese shill. Like, oh, that's where they made all their money back. Because now it's all in China. I'm done watching it.
China.
Yeah, 4 stars.
The Last Night or this or both?
No, this one.
You didn't see The Last Night. Or you didn't see The Last Night.
I've seen it. It was, it's the only one where the robot mindless violence is what is good because human talking is so bad.
I mean, the talking in the Transformers movies has never been, like, amazing for most of the time. But, I mean, the first one is fine. I will have you know that I sat through the entirety of Transformers 2 in the theater. I'm not especially proud of it, but I did. I didn't see the first one in the theater. I saw 2 and 3 in the theater. I like the first one. 3 is okay. 2 is not good, but it's kind of not their fault because it's during the writer's strike. We lost so many things to the writer's strike. We lost heroes to the writer's strike. We almost lost Lost to the writer's strike. We lost Transformers 2 to the writer's strike. We lost so many things. It's really sad. I'm glad they got paid, though, I guess.
You guess?
I mean, I am glad.
Yeah.
But he's guessing they got paid.
I guess they got paid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I didn't see the checks.
If you liked what we said, like and subscribe. If you didn't like what we said,
then leave a comment.
Like and subscribe anyways.
What does it hurt?
Yeah. Maybe we'll say something you like next time.
I won't. Don't put that on me.
What, to say things that people will like?
Yeah. I refuse.
No, that's not what we're here for. We're not here to tell you things that you like. Or to just tell
you
what we
think. But you might like it.
You might like it, but we don't care either way. We're going to say what we want. And that's all we have to say about Underwater, which we didn't talk about the poster because it doesn't have like a cool tagline or something, because nothing really does. I mean, it says 7 miles below the ocean, so for something has awakened, which is not as cool as at unimaginable pressure and impenetrable darkness. So, but the poster does look very much like the Ad Astra poster, because it's just like her head turned into the side and you can see the collar of the diving suit, which is basically a space suit, and like the text is even really similar. So there's that. And I guess that's all we have to say about Underwater. And goodbye to 20th Century Fox, I guess. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Bye.
You're the gay.